and welcome to Learning from Nature, the Biomimicry Podcast with me, your host, Lily Ehrman. I'm so happy you're here. We are a very new species on planet Earth. Our non-human neighbors have been around much longer than us, and we have so much to learn from them. The beautiful and brilliant natural world is an endless source of inspiration, and in this podcast, I aim to explore what we can learn from life around us, share how this field is being practiced globally, and equip you all with the tools necessary to tap into nature's genius. If you are unfamiliar with the term biomimicry, great! We will dive into what it's all about today. If you already know about biomimicry, awesome! I will be interviewing folks in the biomimicry field who are applying this exciting practice to their career, projects, perspective, and life. This space is for everyone. Before I jump into today's topic, a little about me. I grew up in the Bay Area and also lived in the desert of Southern California for a few formative years. I went to undergrad at the University of California, Santa Cruz, where I majored in environmental studies. During these years, I was an active member of the Student Environmental Center and the Sustainability Office. I fell in love with the climate movement and the community of people who are working so hard to create change. But I was also heartbroken by the state of the world and often very frustrated and overwhelmed by it all. The doomsday narrative of climate chaos consumed me, and I felt hopeless. In 2014, I attended a Bioneers conference and first heard about biomimicry. Side note about Bioneers, if you have the chance to go, definitely go. I've been every year since, and it never disappoints. One of the speakers was describing the Biomimicry Design Challenge, where teams of students had created ingenious and important solutions inspired by other organisms. These ideas, some of which seemed so simple and based on existing strategies found in nature, could change lives in communities around the world. A light bulb went off for me. The fact that people were learning from nature to build and design a more sustainable world blew my mind. The realization that all of the solutions we need for our survival already exist in the natural world was both humbling and incredibly hopeful. I returned to campus with renewed joy and enthusiasm. During my junior year, I was part of an amazing program called the Education for Sustainable Living Program, where I spent one semester creating a biomimicry course for other undergrads and learning facilitation techniques, and the other semester teaching this course to students. We spent many days in the arboretum or the redwood forest, deeply curious and cultivating an appreciation for the genius of life. This experience inspired me to write my undergrad thesis on integrating biomimicry into higher education, which is still floating around somewhere on academia.edu. Anyway, this was the start of my biomimicry path, and it eventually led me to Phoenix, where I worked at the Arizona State University Biomimicry Center and helped to launch one of the world's first undergraduate programs in biomimicry. I was also completing the ASU Biomimicry Master's program during these years and cultivated an incredible network of biomimics around the world. I got to work with and learn from Dr. Dana Baumeister, who is an incredible force of change in the biomimicry field, and one of the co-founders, alongside Janine Benyus, of Biomimicry 3.8, the globally recognized consulting firm. Dana, if you're listening, thank you. And you rock. I have since co-founded a startup that began as my master's final project, and I'm a visiting instructor at Pratt University, where I teach a course I created called Biology for Biomimicry, offered for the first time this semester. I now live in Denver, Colorado, and spend as much time as possible in the mountains, hiking, rock climbing, backpacking, and birding with my partner and our sweet shelter dog, Camu. It's so nice to meet you all. Okay, so that's me. I promise I will spend less time talking about myself in the future. Actually, in all other episodes, I will be interviewing biomimics, so that's something to get excited about. All right. What is biomimicry? It's an ancient practice and an emerging field where we learn from nature's forms, processes, and systems to inspire life-friendly design. So people have been learning from nature for millennia, but only in the last 40 or 50 years has this practice made its way into formal Western academia. There are now a few undergrad programs, as well as a couple master's degrees and doctorate programs globally. Students from every major are excited to learn and apply biomimicry methods to their career. Don't worry, I will have an entire episode dedicated to biomimicry in education, where I will share more about these programs. I think the best way to describe biomimicry is to showcase examples of it done well. One of the most common case studies is the Shinkansen train in Japan. This high-speed train was one of the world's first and can go up to 200 miles an hour, but it had a huge problem. When it went through tunnels at a high speed, it would cause a shockwave and tunnel boom. Nearby towns would hear an extremely loud explosion sound, sometimes multiple times a day. Luckily, the engineer on the team was a birder, and he noticed that the kingfisher bird had a unique adaptation. These birds hunt fish and are able to dive into water without creating any splash. He translated this streamlined shape to the front of the train, which completely solved their noise limit issue. The Shinkansen train also adapted the efficient shape of owl wings to the attachment mechanism and penguin bellies to the bottom of the train. Together, these updates allowed the train to use 15% less power and go 10% faster. Like I mentioned in my definition earlier, there are three categories of biomimicry: form, process, and system. The Shinkansen train is an excellent example of form-focused biomimicry, where the engineer learned from the shape of birds to design a more efficient train. An example of biomimicry that is process-focused is Muscle Polymers Glue. This company was inspired by how muscles attach to rock underwater, which is a feat even our toxic chemical-laden glues have a hard time doing. There is a multi-step process for how muscles attach, and it contains some chemistry, so hang on tight. First, its foot appendage reaches out and finds a good place to land on a substrate. Then it secretes some proteins called lysa and dopa in a specific order that prime the rock and form a hard surface for its Bissell threads to grab onto. Lysa joins the party first and essentially clears the way for dopa to work its magic. Dopa is known to stick easily to many surfaces, even non-stick surfaces, because of how it chemically bonds. Basically, every molecule of dopa shares some electrons with the substrate it sticks to, which forms a very strong bond. The company Muscle Polymers has developed a non-toxic and high-performance adhesive known as PCS, which mimics these proteins that muscles are using underwater. PCS is 300% stronger than other underwater adhesives and can bond to a huge range of substrates. There are so many uses for a product like this, and this company is first focusing on getting the product to market for coral restoration, solving a massive need in conservation groups that are working to regrow coral reefs and need them to stay in place for marine ecosystems. As you can probably sense by now, each level of biomimicry, from form to process to system, increases in complexity. For systems level biomimicry, one must understand not only how an ecosystem functions, but the roles that each organism play in that system and operating conditions that impact it, like sunlight, water availability, soil health, and so much more. For example, there are a few companies working to mimic how wetland ecosystems filter water, although this is a daunting task. Restoration projects are also a common application for systems-level biomimicry. There is a ton of potential in the agriculture space as well, and one company called the Land Institute is looking to the nutrient cycling and biodiversity of prairie ecosystems to inform new large-scale growing operations. Biomimicry on the systems level is extremely fascinating and multifaceted. We will explore this realm more later on the podcast. By the way, a great resource and tool for biomimicry is asknature.org. This site is an interactive collection of biological strategies and innovations inspired by them, as well as some really great educator resources. Ask Nature is a wonderful way to explore how nature works and learn how companies are applying these time-tested solutions to ideas and products. I highly recommend adding Ask Nature to your bookmark tab if you haven't already. You can thank me. Something I also want to cover in this first episode is what is not biomimicry. There are so many bio buzzwords out there right now, it can be confusing. I often hear people discuss these terms alongside biomimicry and want to offer some clarification right at the beginning so there's no confusion later on. I do not mean to imply that these fields are not important or they do not still contribute to the greater effort of sustainable and regenerative design. Ooh, this is a good opportunity to take a moment to define both sustainability and regenerative design before we move forward. Sustainability, by definition, is the ability to be maintained at a certain level. And with the climate movement, it focuses on meeting our needs without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. Regenerative design, alternatively, is focused on a whole systems approach and emphasizes processes that restore and renew their own sources of energy or materials. Basically, sustainability is about doing less bad, and regenerative design is about doing good and creating more positive impacts down the line. I want to note that both sustainable and regenerative design are complex and important topics, and we will definitely explore them in more depth in future episodes. Anyway, here are some terms that are not biomimicry, but they can still be really cool and equally as important in designing our future. Biomorphism is mimicking only how something looks, rather than its function. When done well, biomorphism can include architecture that has artistic elements which look like organic patterns or natural materials. Biomorphic design can be really beautiful and evoke a sense of our connection to nature, but most of the time, ultimately, it does not have a deeper functionality. For example, a building that looks like a tree or branch, but does not provide efficient structural support, transport water, or provide habitat to other organisms would be biomorphism. However, biomorphism is related to and builds upon biophilia, which is our innate tendency to seek connections with nature and other forms of life. The biophilia hypothesis was popularized by E.O. Wilson's book Biophilia, which was published in 1984 and has since become a revolutionary practice of integrating nature into the built environment and every aspect of our lives. We will cover biophilia and explore this exciting topic in a future episode. Bio-utilized is when we use something directly from nature to accomplish the design's goals. An example of bio-utilization is the company Ecovative's mycelium packaging. This biodegradable foam-like material is created using fungi and is an incredible alternative to styrofoam, which cannot be recycled or composted and will just continually break into smaller and smaller pieces that end up in waterways and ecosystems around the world. So Ecovative's packaging is a really amazing product, but it is not biomimicry. It is bioutilization. Bioassisted is similar to bioutilized. It's when a design accomplishes its goals with the help of something from nature. An example of this would be using E. coli bacteria to help create materials similar in structure to spider silk. The company BioSteel is using genetically altered bacteria to accomplish this goal. There are a ton of really promising applications for this, including surgical implants. Again, it's not necessarily a bad idea, but this extractive mindset is a dangerous path to walk and can lead to maladaptive designs that are not ultimately life-friendly. One big thing to note is that biomimicry is about function, aka what does the organism, process, or system do, and how does it do it? Function will be a common term used throughout future conversations and interviews, but don't worry, we will discuss it in more detail throughout this podcast. It helps to think of function as the part of the sentence that would complete, quote, how does nature blank, such as, how does nature communicate? How does nature share resources? How does nature create color? Or how does nature physically assemble? Communicate, share resources, create color, and physically assemble are all functions. There are also maladapted and well-adapted applications of biomimicry, which lie on a spectrum. Maladapted biomimicry is still inspired by nature and functions like nature most of the time, but it is not life-friendly. This means it could be made with petroleum products that require extractive mining or lots of toxic chemicals to make. Well-adapted biomimicry is really hard to do, mostly because the systems we have in place for things like material manufacturing or transportation at a large scale require fossil fuels or exploiting workers, just to name a few examples. Anyway, as you can see, biomimicry is a complex and wonderful field full of topics that we will explore here. One last thing I want to mention that we will revisit later is biomimicry's three elements. These are part of the curriculum and methodology guidelines that Biomimicry 3.8 has developed over many years and are core to this practice. Emulate is the element most often talked about because it's associated with the designs we see in media and the news. It's the act of translating nature's genius into an idea and product. Reconnect, with the R and E in parentheses, is about our deep connection to nature. It's about recognizing our recent disconnection and realizing the desire to live in relation to nature. This is a crucial component as it requires us to acknowledge that we are nature. The reconnect element focuses on going outside to observe the natural world around us. And this can reveal so much about our non-human neighbors, the ecosystems in which we live and with them, and even discoveries about ourselves. Ethos represents the philosophy that is at the core of biomimicry. It's about turning to nature as mentor and measure in all aspects of life, not just the products we create. Together, these three guiding elements give biomimicry a holistic and powerful foundation from which the seeds we sow in this practice can take root and grow. Biomimicry is a deep, complex, and beautiful field that we will explore further together. There are so many aspects that I did not cover today that we will discuss in other episodes with members of the biomimicry community. I'm going to wrap it up today, but join me next time for an interview with a biomimic who is practicing learning from nature in their own field. Here are some great resources so you can dive deeper into what I talked about today. The book Biomimicry, Innovation Inspired by Nature by Janine Benyus is a classic and part of the reason this field has taken off so much. The Biomimicry Resource Handbook is a really useful tool for practitioners, written by Dr. Dana Baumeister and available on the Biomimicry 3.8 website. There's a lot of great info in there about every stage of the biomimicry methodology. I will be sharing some books from my biomimicry-related collection every episode, if that's something you might enjoy. Until next time, don't forget to go outside and get curious about this incredible and inspiring planet we call home.